The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Chris.
And this is episode 482, Dice Tower Award nominations and Origins Awards. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hey friends, we're back and we are back with Chris. Chris is here.
Hey everybody, how you doing?
We're so happy to be here with you. It's going to be a great episode. We are, of course, talking about our friends at the Dice Tower Network, their awards nominations. It's award season. I didn't know it was a thing, but Chris, it seems to be a thing every year around this time. We had Spiel des Jahres. We had Origins. We had Junk. I mean, there's a lot of things happening right now. It's really intense. And one of the things that just recently happened, obviously, we talked about the Dice Tower, but also Origins Game Fair just wrapped up, and they just did their award ceremony, and we also had that list of winners. And that was something that we had talked about a couple weeks back, so check episode 480 to see how right and or wrong Chris and I were as far as our thoughts, feelings, and predictions about the future.
I think we did pretty well in our guesses.
I think so. Not too bad. So Origins is really hard to predict because they have some really interesting categories and they span a wide range of the tabletop industry. So it's just not tabletop games or RPGs. It's like everything, like literally everything. And they also do the fan awards. So we'll talk about that too, because I think that's super important to see what everyone's saying about what they want. And I don't know, Chris, have you ever been to Origins?
No, it's one of those conventions I've always wanted to hit up.
No, I recommend it. It's the five best days in gaming, as they say, and it's a very chill environment. It's about around, and again, please forgive me about numbers. I think I have the numbers here, but it's around the same size and the same vibe as far as, I guess, PAX Unplugged, which I know you've been to.
Yeah.
This past year, they're reporting that their attendance went up 10%. They raised over $7,000 for Extra Life, and 88 pints of blood were donated, which is also very cool. It's nice when they're supporting charity and stuff.
I didn't know they did blood drives while they were doing Origins.
I did not know that either, and I've been there multiple times. I mean, they do it because it's Anthony's birthday, so. But this year they had 17,706 attendees, which is saying 10% up from last year. And that's pretty cool. 17,000 people at Origins.
That's a lot of games that happening there.
Yeah, I know our friend Tim was there. I saw Tim's pictures. Hey, Tim. I saw your stuff out there, man. I saw you had a good time. So that was great. Unfortunately, we weren't able to attend. Anthony was away. But I think next year, for certain, we're going. So, Chris, you got to come with us. It's a good time.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'm down.
So we'll talk about that in a little bit, because all of that stuff is really cool. It's nice to see awards going out, convention season kind of popping off a little bit. But before we get into that, this is the last week before Board Game Academics' big academic conference. So we've been talking about this for weeks, months, I don't know, years. We've been talking about this for a while. We are so very fortunate to have the opportunity to promote and platform 11 wonderful academic scholars, practitioners who are, you know, creating new research, scholarship, showing maybe some teaching methods or utilizing tabletop games in their own practice. So we have 11 of them. And as part of our process for them to be in the journal, we take an opportunity to bring their work out to the public so that everyone gets to see it. The thing about academic journals, which is a little weird, if you haven't worked in academia, it sometimes or oftentimes or almost always, it is very much that idea of the ivory tower. So you're either in the in crowd or you're not in the in crowd. So what we're trying to do is make everyone part of the in crowd. So we want new emerging academics, professionals, practitioners, people in the public, gamers, to see all the great things that happens with tabletop gaming. So ergo, the conference. So there's a lot of great stuff there. And again, I want to kind of point you to the website, and I'll talk about that a little bit at the end. But one of the announcements that I was holding on to that I'm happy to talk about now is our keynote speaker, Emerson Matsuchi.
Ooh, I'm a huge fan of him.
So you might know Emerson Matsuchi. I mean, obviously his big hit Century Spice Road series. I'm the big Gollum fan of the Spice Road kind of
tech
from Plan B. We recently talked about one of his games coming up, but his massive, huge box kind of game, Foundations of Rome, that raised over $2 million on Kickstarter. If you got it, you got it. You got really lucky because that game was huge. Must have cost them, it seems like $2 million to ship those games out. So, and he's just an amazing person, amazing professional, and also an academic. He teaches courses on game design at the NYU Game Center. We'll also have Andrew Parks. Andrew Parks has created so many great games in the Star Wars universe. I'm sorry, not Star Wars. Star Trek universe. Forgive me, Trekkies. And also Core Worlds was probably another great game that you know. And he is revitalizing one of the games that I've been waiting for I think, at least 10 years. We're going to see Arthurian Legends. So instead of the Tales of Arabian Nights, was a game way back when, where you had this giant kind of book that you flip through and you make different decisions and you had to flip through another section. Now we have it from the perspective of Arthurian Legend. So really excited about that. And Andrew Parks also teaches at Rutgers University. So we're so happy to have those two great game designers, 11 academic scholars, professionals, practitioner game designers out there. A wonderful opportunity to learn more about tabletop gaming and all the great stuff that's going on there. And if you would like to either physically attend this conference, it's only $15 to attend. If you would like to attend online, this is also available online. We have a Zoom and a Discord channel set up for this. Go to boardgameacademics.com. That, you know, you can follow through the website there, or boardgameacademics.com/register. That will give you a live stream of the entire convention with all the guest speakers, the keynote, Emerson Matsuchi, all the academics, myself, Anthony will be there. He'll be doing some stuff. Our friend Will be doing a panel presentation about tabletop gaming with a number of psychologists, showing you how to use tabletop gaming for the therapeutic benefits. It's just going to be a really great time. It's a great opportunity to celebrate what we do. And for a lot of people out there, they may not know that tabletop gaming does a lot of other things outside of just being fun. And the fun translates to health. It translates to teaching. It translates to creating communities. And like the work that you do, Chris, it translates to charity and helping people out in different communities and bringing literally everyone to the table. That real authentic diversity and enjoyment of having a full table or a full convention full of people.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the benefits of board gaming firsthand these last couple of years, and I'm really happy that this is what's going to be highlighted at the event.
Absolutely. So again, if you can't be there in person, we'll be at Morristown, New Jersey on July 4th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Please take a look at the link. Come on to the Discord. Enjoy the festivities on there. Get to see what's happening at your own pace, no matter where you are in the world. And we're having speakers from around the world attend, both online and in person. And it really is a big support for everyone that's there. Support these new academics. Support these new practitioners. Support Emerson Matsuchi, who's going to be there. You'll have an opportunity to ask questions of people, ask questions about the work that they're doing, and really engage in a meaningful way. That's what BGA is always about. True engagement, getting everyone to the table, and having a great time. We absolutely, positively hope to see you there. Again, if you have any questions, hit us up on Facebook and or BoardGamersAnonymous.com or my email address, Chris@BoardGamersAnonymous.com. Anthony's still a little bit MIA, but eventually he'll be back and he'll definitely be there at the convention. So we hope to see you. And again, congratulations to everyone who's involved. All right, Chris, so that's everything that's going on with us. Let's get on to the stuff that we want to talk about. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders. What'd you play, or what do you want to play, Chris?
So I've been wanting to play Harmonies. It's like the new hot abstract that's kind of hitting everybody's table right now. The art is absolutely amazing. It's only been out for a short period of time, and it's already ranked number 4 in abstract games. And I'm really excited to try to get to the table. The components look really cool. The gameplay looks amazing. This is definitely going to be on top of my want list.
Yeah, I've seen this, and just the cover alone, I just want to play the game because it's so inventive and thoughtful. I am not an abstract fan, but when the artwork is this good, I want to play it now.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I'm really excited about this one.
No, I can imagine why. So for my acquisition disorder this week, I'm looking back a little bit at a game that I played, but they have a new expansion for it. So you all know about Kemet. I don't know, Chris, have you played Kemet?
Yeah, someone gifted it to me for Christmas one year.
Whoever that person is, they're awesome. Kemet is
my brother-in-law. Hi, Chris.
Hey! Chris and Chris? Your brother-in-law is Chris?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We're everywhere.
He needs to come on the podcast. There'll be 3 Chrises. That'd be awesome. Not confusing whatsoever.
The Chris, and Chris show.
Excellent. So, Kemet, this is, you got the new Kickstarter, the new version, right?
No, he actually gave me the old version.
Oh, pretty.
Yeah, and he gave it to me in a different language, and I had to get a rule book that was in English afterwards.
All right. So, the new version was on, I want to say it was on Kickstarter, although I don't remember now at this point. But
yeah,
I believe it was on Kickstarter. And now it's also on GameFound, which seems to be the way things are going these days. Like, put something on Kickstarter to benefit from the marketing and then bring it over to GameFound to sell it again. Because Kickstarter doesn't like you selling something twice.
Yeah.
So I get it. This is Kemet, Rise of the Gods. Discover a host of new expansions and way to play Kemet Blood and Sand. In this acclaimed strategy board game, play as an Egyptian god, lead armies, unlock divine powers, and fight your rivals for dominance. From the creators of Cyclades, Innes, and Galactic Renaissance, and many more games. Matigo Games does a great job. Fantastic production. I had the original version. I don't know what happened to it. I had it. At some point, I did have it. I think we did a charity event or something, and it went out. But Kemet is all about really forcing battling. So it's troops on a map, but you actually have to do a thing. You have to fight. You can't turtle in that game.
Yeah.
So the new version is very nice. I have the new version, and I like it. Ankh was out around the same time. I think Ankh came out either just before or just after. And I think it just came out just before. And I was like, no, Kemet, because Kemet's, you know, tried and true. But the thing that Ankh had that Kemet didn't have was these giant god characters that came into play. You were loosely, abstractly playing a god character. Now, with the expansion, you are playing one of the Egyptian gods.
Oh, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. So they have really nice, big, detailed figures that come into play here. And you get to do more. Now, again, there's multiple modules here. So more might be all the modules or what you just generally want to put in. So, like, giant miniatures. Like, that's the first thing, first and foremost, giant miniatures. And that's kind of a thing. Because, again, you're playing the gods with the different powers. They're also... Chris, I don't know if you how you feel about giant big boxes of board games.
I feel like the game has to warrant it.
Okay. So they have a pledge, the God pledge, of course, which has the giant box where you can put all your Kemet stuff in.
So it will fit base game, expansions, everything into it.
And supposedly more, which kind of frightens me.
Oh.
So it's going to have the God mode expansion, the solo mode, the team mode, amber tiles, the new ones, amethyst tiles, new, six-player expansion. Anthony's going to love that. the new big box, the new rule book, and the six new player aids. So, because again, there's a lot more in the game.
Yeah.
So,
So I remember in Blood and Sands Kickstarter, Cthulhu made an appearance.
Yes.
So, will you get a Cthulhu miniature to play as him in this?
I'm not seeing it, but it's right now. It's a preview. By the time you listen to the episode, the campaign will be out. I'm looking at the preview here. So you will get new amber tiles. And if you know about Kemet, it's all about these, I guess, like, it's about building a tableau of these square tiles that give you special abilities, offense, defense, and a lot of other things.
Yeah.
So these amber tiles will give you new servants and new servant tiles to go along with it. There's also more creatures, which is awesome.
Oh, cool.
And the amethyst tiles bring in a lot of the really freaky stuff. A lot of the the really dark kind of creatures here. Six-player expansion. They're purple. I like purple in a game. I don't know if I want to play this game with six players. Although, you can play teams. So,
three on three.
That might work. You know, you could play teams of two or three. And it's supposed to be streamlined. I like that idea. So that might be something. And then it also has a solo mode, which I'm not usually the biggest solo fan for giant games because it takes a lot of space. But sure, why not? Right? You spent a Pharaoh's ransom on this. You might as well do the thing. And then the giant big box, Chris, is a crazy giant big box. But again,
is it like Everdell size big box?
It's squarer, but it looks to be
okay.
It looks to be again. Looks. I'm using the word looks very, you know, you can't see the air quotes on a podcast, but it looks to be, I would say, even bigger. Because again, miniatures.
Oh, geez.
Miniatures, man. It's got miniatures. Okay. So now one of the things that they're saying with the campaign is some of these, I guess another word would be Kickstarter exclusives, but here it's direct exclusives, which means that they won't sell it in retail. So if you don't buy it now, you're going to have to try through their website or special events or something, which means you're probably going to pay more. So
I remember CMON did this with the Bloodborne board game. Mm. They were like, these two expansions will only be printed for this, and that's it. And I remember for a while afterwards, you were able to find them for pretty cheap, but now they go for like $150, $200 for crazy. The expansion.
Yeah.
But Chris, why is it that purple is always the expansion color?
Yeah, it's purple and orange, right? Or pink.
Yeah.
Purple, orange, pink. I don't know. They go primary way too often. I'm not sure, because it doesn't make sense in this context. Purple kind of gets bumped out.
Yeah.
It's usually...
Purple's always the fifth and sixth player.
Yes, yes. I mean, maybe they save it because, like, that's a color that a lot of people find interesting. So, like, it'll entice you to buy the six-player expansion. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm. Or a fifth player expansion, which is also something Anthony hates off the top of my head. it's always like red, blue, and then typically green, sometimes black.
I hate when it's black, or if it's like a game with wood pieces and it's just like natural color. It's like, no. Don't cheap out on me now.
What color you want to play? The natural color. Okay. And then it's like you said, pink and purple are kind of the fifth, sixth player kind of modules, usually most games. And then orange is kind of a rare one to see too.
I love seeing orange game pieces. Yes. Yeah.
I used to play, when we started with the podcast and stuff, I used to always play black because we used to play 3 or 4 or 5 player games and I don't care what color to play. And then over time, black was not really in games very often. So then I started playing green just because we had other people always playing red and blue and sometimes yellow. Yellow was also a primary color that was always a standard third player in that kind of game. And now I'm only playing green because, like, I am mentally locked into green at this point.
Oh, same. I feel like every game, it's always, if I can get my hands on green, that's always the color I go for.
It's like, this is going to be embarrassing. I'm going to move your green pieces. And they're like, why? I'm like, look.
It's happened so often.
I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be the, I didn't want to kind of like lock into a color. And now I'm locked into a color. Because I like you said, I like to play the odd colors, like the black, the purple, the pink, the orange, especially because it's different. It's fun. And now it's just like, I don't know. I played yellow at the last game day and someone else was playing green. I was like, oh, this is going to be bad. I did fine.
Yeah, you're not going to play well because every time you look at the board, you're 100. Like thinking about green's moves and it's your turn. You're like, oh, God, what am I doing?
I thought I had that spot or that piece or that thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, not good. Again, this looks like an excellent campaign. There's no prices up for it yet. It's certainly going to be compatible with, I'm just double checking here, Kemet Blood and Sand. I don't know, Chris, if it's going to be compatible. I'm going to say no, as far as like
the original. Because last time they had an upgrade pack to kind of bring it up, but okay. I think it was just gameplay-wise, it was kind of bring it up, not maybe component-wise.
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess we'll have to see until next week.
Yeah, a couple of days. This will be up in a couple of days. It's Friday at the time of recording. It's 3 more days. So next week it'll just be up. So I'm excited. I'm not expecting to pay all the money. It's a lot of plastic and it's a giant box. So like maybe I should stop. I don't know. I mean, the gods are cool because it gives you asymmetrical powers. I mean, the game generally does as it is, but I don't know. If you feel like you missed out on Ankh, this might do it for you.
It's funny because when both those games were up, I ended up backing Ankh, and I got the all-in everything, and I remember playing it, and I was like, yeah, I'm happy I backed this over Kemet. Yeah.
Wow.
Because it was a area control game that played well at 2 players.
Sure.
You don't see that very often.
That's true.
And I just really liked the gameplay. It was very, like, it was like an interesting chess kind of, like, area control.
Did you like the fact that if you play with multiple players, I don't know if you have, but, like, you did the combined team situation?
Yeah, so I feel like the first time, like, we did the merging, I wasn't a big fan of it. After you've done it once and you kind of, you know what to expect.
Sure.
It becomes a better mechanic because then it's something that you end up planning for and you could use it strategically. You know, you can choose, let me not focus on points. Let me focus on like area or units or like, you know, let me move around and get more resources. Like, let me get more followers. And then because you know that the merge is coming, you're a few points behind and then you start preparing for the merge instead of just going, oops, I've merged.
Yeah. So instead of avoiding the merge, which is generally what I think people are doing because they want to win on their own.
Yeah.
You plan for the merge at some point and you downshift a little bit, which again, and now you become very valuable with the merge.
Exactly. Instead of like splitting everything up and then in the end feeling like a player and a half, you'll merge and you really will feel like the 2 players. And you'll feel a bit more of a powerhouse. And then it's interesting because then even though you do get stronger, like you know, you have way more reach, your like action, your flexibility with actions is way better because it's a bit more split. the table starts to go against you a bit more.
Sure.
And it's harder to kind of play the, like, the political side of the table.
Yeah.
Because everyone's looking at you like, no, no, no. Like, you're doing just fine. You're okay.
Yeah. I've played it a couple of times and I didn't love the merge, but I never built towards the merge.
Yeah.
So maybe I got to build towards the merge.
It's like any other like game mechanic. Just like you have to add it to your strategy. Don't aim for it. Because it's like, if it's happening to you, it's because you're behind. So don't aim for it. But if you see, you know what, doesn't look like I'm going to be able to pull ahead, use it to your advantage.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that's our acquisition stories. Chris, let's talk about the games that did get to the table this week. We'll let people know if those games are a buy and they should run out and pick those games up. If those games are a play and they should avoid them. If those games are dodge. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm all drunk here at the moment. Joking here. You buy it. You play it, you dodge it, or you burn it. Because clearly my brain is a little bit burnt at this point. It's late. We're doing a podcast very late at night. All right, Chris, what'd you play this week?
So I played Root.
Okay.
With specifically with the Marauders expansion factions. So we played Keepers of Iron and Lords of Hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
And the original idea we had for the night was we were going to get a 4-player game of Root going on. We had everyone heading over. We played a quick game of Food Chain Magnate beforehand. And then everybody bailed. And it was just me and one other friend that were setting up Root. And I brought out the... I don't know if you've ever seen the Hirelings modules that mm-hmm. you can play with in Root. So they're like mini versions of all the factions. And it kind of helps fill out the map when you're playing just like 2 or 3 players.
Sure.
So we busted out the factions to be able to play, and we had 3 Hirelings, our 2 big factions, and it was an absolute blast.
Mm.
I feel like I've always had a hard time getting Root to the table, because you really do need like 4 players to make the game shine. It's good at 3, but like 4 is where it really pops.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to get it back to the table now at 2 players. Because of the Hirelings expansion.
Oh.
I think it was such a great addition to the game. It gives you these like little mini factions on the board that you can interact with. You're able to attack them. You're able to use them as your units. The factions swing back and forth. It's a very interesting like mini catch-up mechanic for the people who might be behind. And yeah, it made the game just way more interesting for 2 players. And I really want to give it a try again.
Very nice. Yeah, there's so many different expansions. I've lost track at this point with Root. And no, I think it's a shame, because that sounds like a really fun expansion. So maybe that's one I should just buy.
Yeah, I would say so. During the Kickstarter, they had all the Hirelings bundled together.
Okay.
And it looks like now they've kind of split them up. So the Hirelings that like mimic the base game faction have their own box. The ones for River Folk and Marauders and Underworld, like they each have their own box now. So it's nice, because I guess you can kind of pick it a la carte, whichever factions you want.
Mm-hmm.
But it is nice having all of them mixed together and just kind of pulling randomly.
Okay.
So, I mean, if it's something that you see that like you're having a hard time getting Root to the table, but you play 2-player games pretty reliably, I would say pick up the Hireling packs.
Nice.
It will be 100% worth your money.
Oh, nice. All right.
Yeah.
Super buy then, not just a regular buy. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, because I feel like people want to get Root to the table. This will just help you get to the table more often.
Excellent. All right, what else did you play, Chris?
We played Food Chain Magnate beforehand.
So a filler. You played a filler before the
Oh, yeah, game. I walked into my friend's house and he had Food Chain Magnate set up on the like dining room table, and he just gave me this look of like, oh, we doing this? And he already had 50s diner music playing on the speakers. So we played a quick game of that before Root. I ended up going rushing pizza, pizza, pizza. People couldn't keep up with the pizza demand, and I just kept raising the prices of pizza while no one else was able to make them fast enough, and I ended up busting the bank fast enough to get out with the win. Yeah.
No one expects the pizza strategy.
No, pizza rush.
Yeah. That game is when you're in the zone in that game, it's just, it feels so incredibly good. And then when you are under the bus, you are under the bus. Like, there's not a worse feeling about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, by the end of the game, I was like, had my wad of cash in front of me, and I was just counting. I'm like, 300, 400. I looked at my friend, I'm like, how you doing, man? And he's like, I have $58. Oh, and no. I was like, oh, buddy, I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Yeah. Again, if you're going to play and you want everyone to walk away at least feeling like they have an opportunity, the catch-up mechanic, the expansion for it, is certainly very helpful. So, again, it depends on how many modules you throw in there and what modules you think you might have, because there's modules to help you sell food or market or change the physical board setup. So, I don't know. I mean, generally, that game's still a buy for me.
It's not my favorite game. Okay. I think maybe just because aesthetically.
Sure.
And I think that's what keeps it from a buy for me.
Okay.
And it's also very much a game that, like, everyone that you're playing with has to kind of be in the same skill level.
Yes.
Because if there's one person that, like, knows the ins and outs of the game more than others, they will steamroll every time. They will build a snowball and they'll just get bigger and bigger and nobody will be able to keep up.
Yeah, that's why I think the catch-up mechanic is so essential to the gameplay, because it does allow people to kind of literally catch up.
It's the equalizer.
It is. So, all right, excellent. I got to play two oldies but goodies. First up, I got to play Marrakesh. This is the Stefan Feld City Collection. This is his newer one. We've talked about this previously, got it back to the table, got it with a new group. Full group at the table, four players. And it was interesting because when we sat down to get to the table, Chris, have you played Marrakesh yet?
I haven't played Marrakesh. Okay. It's a game I feel like I've heard of a lot about, but I've never actually played it before.
It's a very big game. It's probably, again, with the City Collection, there's a lot of big games. But I think Marrakesh, physically, as far as the main board, the player boards, and all the pieces, it's just gigantic at the table. And because it's so big at the table and because there's so many tiles, I had them start a game of Sorrow while I was setting the game up. And then I would jump over there and then I would play. I would take my turn, which is just basically playing a tile and hoping not to fall off. So this is a double review at the same time. Sorrow's great. It's a cool abstract game where you try not to fall off the table. So
that I feel like is a great entry level abstract game to show people.
Yes, because again, all you have to do is play the tile and then just follow the path and please don't hit anybody else or yourself off the map. So I'm running over and doing that as I'm setting up Marrakesh. Again, giant player boards and a lot of tiles and a cube tower. And they come over finally and they're like, all right, what's this? I'm like, so I'm explaining the game and they're like, yeah, but what's the theme? And I'm like, it's Marrakesh. And I'm looking at, I pull out the rule book and I'm like, doesn't really say much of anything. You're kind of an influential family here and you're using assistance and resources to be the most successful person in Marrakesh. And they're like, really? And I'm like, it literally says nothing here other than like not even two lines. Like it doesn't even try.
You know, I'll take that over. We're trading in the Mediterranean.
All right. Yeah, no, I hear that. And again, like you said, you like abstract, so you might like this game because it is, at the end of the day, it's very abstract. Again, what you're basically doing is you have these keshis, these different people out there. And again, there are a number, they're tradespeople, they're scholars, they're a whole bunch of different guards, they're a whole bunch of different, you know, color keshis, and they relate to different spots on your board. So you'll select three secretly and you'll hold them out. Everyone selects three. Then you'll place your assistants, which are three meeple heads, and you'll place them on your board because that match the color of these keshis, which are just octagon little, you know, they're basically cubes. And then you'll kind of put them, you'll drop them in the cube tower along with everyone else's, and you're selecting three out of 12. So what your colors might be may not be someone else's colors, or it may be the cube tower catches some of the keshis And then what comes out is the actions that you're able to take on the board. So in turn order, you're going to choose one or two of a keshi color and put them in one of the sections that match the color. That enhances slashes, you know, it empowers the section. So if you have your assistant there and has a couple of keshis, you're going to be able to have a big, you know, big moment with that assistant. If you have zero or, you know, zero keshis there, the assistant can drop a keshi. So as the game goes on, your board's filling up with keshis and all of your actions become more powerful, including purchasing things from the market, which is a lot of fun. Eventually you get some end game bonuses that you're shooting for, and you're trying to fill up certain sections of keshis. So if you fill up a section of keshis along with a red keshi for water, you'll score 10 points of the game. So scoring those 10 points is very big. Scoring those end game point tiles, those oases, are very good. You can only score three of them. And then purchasing different clothing items or jewelry items is also very big, because that can range anywhere from 2 to, I think, 12 points or maybe even 15 points. Huh. So that's pretty much it. You do different things on the board. And again, it's very abstract, so it's neither here or there, but you do need to collect dates, water, and money throughout the game, because you have to take care of your people and also be able to purchase power-ups and be able to purchase different items on the board or go down the river. So again, a very abstract, straightforward game. You have 12 different colored keshis. You pick three. They go in the cube tower. You pick out what you can, and then you play it to your board, and you activate your assistants, three. And then you do the ability that they're able to do in that particular section, and that's it. Wash, rinse, and repeat. That's the game. Three rounds, four stages in each round. And that's pretty much it. I mean, there's nothing else too complicated. It just looks big. It looks complicated. It is massive. but there's nothing really challenging or problematic. There is a couple of little tiny rules on some of the sections that are very easy to overlook. And the rule book is not the best. But again, if you play through it, you know, fumble a little bit, not a problem. Everything is open information except for your keshis, which you're hiding. So I'm surprised. Like, I've gotten a lot of play out of Marrakesh, because unlike a lot of other Stefan Feld games in the City Collection, this is pretty straightforward. Anybody can play this. This can be a gateway game, because you take the keshis, you play the action. You have to be a gamer to get a lot of points out of it, because certain things chain together, but generally it's not that difficult. The one strategy that I would give anyone who's playing this game for the very first time, or even if you play it before, is depending on where you are in player order, because the number of keshis are going to come out are relatively consistent. Now, throughout the game, keshis get caught in the cube tower. And then as more get dropped in, more keshis fall out. So you could have a turn that has more keshis coming out of it than went into it. Or you could have a turn where a lot of keshis go in, but only a few come out. So if you're first player, you're going to have a good choice, but you may not get a second choice if there's too few. If you're the last player,
keshis enter.
Yeah.
One leaves.
100%. I don't want to talk about what goes on in the game and the cube tower, because, you know, what goes on in the cube tower stays in the cube tower. But depending on player order, you can almost predict how many keshis you're going to be able to get that turn. So you might want to hold your good stuff until a point where you think you might be able to get, you know, two, or maybe you're first player and you absolutely need that turn. So turn order is essential. Please think about that when playing Marrakesh. Suro gets a buy. It's fairly inexpensive. There's a super crazy deluxe version. I think it's like 300 some odd dollars or more.
With a bamboo board, yeah, and all wooden pieces.
I think it's even more expensive now that it's like secondary market, because so it's several hundred dollars to $1,000 at this point. You don't need to do that.
No, not for a game like Suro.
No,
it does come with all three versions of Suro, though.
Yeah, it's nice. If you like it that much, go out and drop the cash on it. You could play it on your phone. I have it on my phone. You could
probably make a copy of Suro like that for less money.
Oh, 100%. You could get a bunch of like little sample tiles from like hardware store and just like take a permanent marker and draw the pathways.
Yeah. I mean, and you'll have your own deluxe version of Sura.
100%. So yeah, Sura Marrakesh, solid plays and buys if that is 100% your thing, I would say. All right.
So how long did Marrakesh run for anyway?
With three new players, it ran about 2 hours.
Okay.
I don't think it needs to run that long, but it can be just a little bit fiddly because, again, each of the sections does its own thing. And while you're operating only three sections on that particular turn, it, you know, you have to remember like, oh, I'm in the pink section. I have to turn the dial before I, you know, choose the action. Or if I'm in the raw natural wood section, then I have to pick, I have to have a guard that goes along with the gate, and then I have to purchase the gate. So it's a bunch of little rules, but as the game goes on, it certainly speeds up. So does not need to take 2 hours, but the setup does. Setup takes some time.
Setup takes 2 hours.
Ah, yeah, 100%. All right, so that's everything that got to the table this week. Chris, before we get into the feature, let's just kind of do some paperwork and clean up Origins Game Awards. Let's talk about that first, because we previewed it. Let's finish it, right? We got some award winners here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we got a good amount of the from our guesses from last time we did this. You want to hit it off with the first one?
Yeah, so best cooperative game. Chris, I know that this was like, you knew it. We all kind of knew it, but you knew it, Chris. You were like, I don't even want to talk about anything else. I'm like, Chris, there's other games in the category. You're like, no, it's this game or nothing.
It's all about Sky Team.
It's about Sky Team. So Sky Team wins best co-op game. Not a surprise here. The only thing I will say, which is a little, it's a co-op, 100%, not denying that here. I always think of a co-op as more than two people. Right? I don't know.
No. Yeah. Holding hands, walking down together. I guess. Co-op.
Sure. Okay. I always think
the plane flies together or crashes together. There's no way around it.
Oh no. All right. Best gateway game. I think this was us. This was on you, Chris. I think you nailed this one too.
Yeah. Wandering Towers has been probably my favorite intro game that's come out in a long time. If I see Wandering Towers in as many households as Ticket to Rides, I will be very happy, because this game deserves all the attention. Super easy to play, super easy to teach. If you are even slightly interested in a game that can play up to like 6-7 players,
yeah,
definitely look at Wandering Towers.
Yeah, it's a game from Capstone Games, which are typically known for their heavy Euros, and it's nice that they brought out something a little bit lighter for the, you know, the gateway gamers.
Yeah, it's literally, the game is play two cards from your hand, move towers, move your meeples, try to get your meeples into the special cup, and then you get to cover each other with like these towers, and once like your meeples are in the towers, you can't check where they are, you have to remember them. And so you're trying to keep track of like your four wizards and everybody else's four wizards to see how many they have left. Mm-hmm. And you get bonuses for covering each other. It's nice, because like the game incentivizes you to be mean to each other.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, best light strategy game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this one's Leaf. This is the game that I said I was interested in last time.
Yeah.
Mainly because of the artwork for it.
Yeah.
And I'm always down for nature-themed games.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy to see that this is the one that won.
Yeah, it looks to be a great game. I haven't played yet, but will. Best thematic board game. This is a little bit of a surprise here.
Yeah. Freelancers, a crossroads game. And when I saw this at first, I was like, oh, what is this? And we had to like check it out. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like I think it was Thunder Road Vendetta was on this category as well. I'm actually kind of surprised that that didn't win.
I'm really surprised, because again, as far as theme is concerned, and like maybe there should be a table appeal game. But I thought as theme, you know, was concerned, yeah, that one was on the mark. So Freelancers, crossword game, is surprising. All right, best heavy strategy game. This is kind of controversial here a little bit.
Yeah. So our guesses were kind of right, because we both said that we kind of knew Dune Imperium was going Uprising was going to win this one.
Yes.
But we were also saying that, like, in that category, it was three games that were either expansions or reimplementations. And then Kunta Hora was the only one that wasn't a re-implemented game.
Yes.
So it's weird to say that, like, Dune Imperium Uprising, which is really, really similar. It's almost like Dune Imperium Second Edition.
Mm-hmm.
That it's, like, up for, like, a Game of the Year award, kind of.
Yeah.
It's very weird to see it here.
It is. There's such a big following for Dune Imperium. So it was kind of a given. And Uprising, again, I would say is better. It's a better version.
And it's just almost like Dune Imperium put a mustache on this year and was like, hey, I'm somebody different. And they just wanted to, like, be on the podium again. And it's like, no, you aged out of this category. You're not allowed here anymore.
That's right. Pay no attention to the other Dune Imperium over there. It's not a real game. It's me. This was one that I picked on here. Best party / social board games, Smug Owls.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
yeah, I don't know much about this one, but I do remember saying that I really enjoyed the name of this game.
I thought it was going to win. I'm glad I pulled it off. Next, best solo board game, Legacy of You.
I'm not too knowledgeable on this game, to be honest.
It's a lot of writing on a piece of paper there. That's how I usually look at Roll and Writes and stuff like that. But, you know, don't hate on me.
Oh, it's Roll and Write.
Yeah. This one I did pick. Best children's and family board game, Diced Veggies.
Yes, really excited that this one won. This is the game where you have like a grid of dice, and you actually get this little cardboard cleaver to chop and separate the dice into separate sections. I'm really happy this one, because I think this is a really cool kids game.
100%. And we go into it. Well, I don't know. I don't know. Chris, you just run through these.
Sure. Best fixed constructible game.
Yes, that's a thing.
Magic the Gathering, Universes Beyond, Lord of the Rings, Tales of Middle Earth, Commander Decks.
Okay.
A mouthful.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's best randomized constructible game.
Okay.
And we have Magic the Gathering, Beyond, Universes Beyond, the Lord of the Rings, Tales of Middle Earth, Collector Booster.
What a twist.
Yeah. Best miniature games product. This one I'm not surprised at all.
Not surprised.
So this is Star Wars Shatterpoint.
Yeah.
This is the big Star Wars miniature game that they've been pushing now, especially now from the sad news of Armada and X-Wing going away.
Yeah, it's very upset about that.
So this is definitely going to be the Star Wars miniature game that they're going to be pushing for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got best puzzle game,
uh-huh.
Threads of Fate.
Sure, why not?
Best role-playing game adventure.
Mm-hmm.
You want to pronounce that one?
Is it
Hecna?
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 With an exclamation point?
Yeah, Hecna, deluxe box set.
Sure.
Best role-playing core game product is Die, the role-playing game.
That seems like it's made up. It's a real thing, but, you know.
Best role-playing game starter product is Dreams and Machines starter set.
Okay.
I like the name of that.
Good.
Best role-playing game supplement is Dune Power and Pawns.
Okay.
Best dice and dice related accessory is the Glyphic Blind Bag Dice Bag Series 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
And then this next one has got me a little bit upset. This is the best game accessory,
mm-hmm.
and it is Frame-A-Majigs
from
Hit Point Press.
Love the name.
And it is a picture frame
for
your trading cards.
Ooh.
So I would not count that as a game accessory at all. It shows like a picture of like a Black Lotus being sleeved into a picture frame.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And while I always like having people put up like game art and really kind of appreciating like the artwork that goes into these things, mm-hmm. and wanting to display it, that's great. I would not call it a game accessory at all.
Sure.
So
do not buy this for Christmas. That's just what
it's no. take it off of my stocking stuffer. I don't want it.
And it doesn't come with the Black Lotus, is what you're saying.
No, it does not come with a Black Lotus. So, yeah, just make sure you read the fine print.
So if you own a Black Lotus, which is what, typically $50,000, $100,000 or, you know.
Oh, I forgot. I think it just broke the record again like most expensive trading card because it just went like to auction another time.
And you're going to put it in a $14 frame?
Yeah, you can put it in a $14 frame that they got from Michaels.
I think you should put it in a vault.
Yeah.
Here's a vault for your Black Lotus cards. Like, that makes sense. I get that.
All right, next we got best role-playing game related accessory.
Mm-hmm.
It is the D&D Icons of the Realm Adventure in a Box Mind Flayer Voyage.
Nice.
Best 2D artwork is from Quan Chai Moria for Empire's End.
Mm-hmm.
Best 3D component is Threads of Fate Puzzle Box. Best game related writing is Grace Collins for Shadow in the Night Part 2. Cozy Companion Magazine. We got Best Media Production. Eleni Pompadopoulou? I cannot pronounce that last name. For Making Board Games.
Sure.
The CGE documentary. It's an 8-part series.
Wonderful. Yeah.
You saw it?
I saw it, yeah.
Oh, how was it?
It was very good. CGE did a really good job with that.
Oh, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the fan favorite, which is Distilled by Paperson Games.
Yeah, that was always what Origins did, which I loved it about Origins is, and again, back in the day before COVID, was when we went, you could vote on the awards. And the fan favorite, you know, award was really special. So, congratulations to all the winners. And on some level, especially Distilled for pulling out fan favorite, because
yeah,
that's hotly contested as far as all the great games that came out this year.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see a bit more of Distilled later on in this episode when we start talking about the Dice Tower Awards.
All right, well, that brings on to our feature review. So our features review this week, of course, the Dice Tower Award nominations. Tom Vassell and our friends over the Dice Tower and all of the people there. I think we're still voting members on there, so we might have a vote here as far as which games are the best for 2023 for the Dice Tower. Chris, we got some really great nominees and a number of different interesting categories. So
yeah,
why don't you run us through these?
All right. So the first category they've got up is Best Welcoming Game.
So not Gateway Game. Welcoming.
Yeah, Welcoming Game. So they said in the beginning when they were talking about this category, it's not just about being an entry-level game,
mm-hmm.
but it's an entry-level game that they think has lasting effects on the industry.
Oh, wow.
So okay. Not just like a, you know, whatever the entry game of the year is going to be that, just, oh, you know, we'll talk about it for a year or so and then disappears into the ethos.
Mm-hmm.
These are games they think are actually going to be able to stick around for long term.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah. So we've got Dice Manor,
mm-hmm.
Fiction,
yeah,
Gnar,
okay,
Robot Quest Arena,
sure,
and Wandering Towers.
I mean, Chris, it's got to be Wandering Towers.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's my pick for these five. Definitely. I would say Wandering Towers is my first pick, and Fiction will probably be my second one on this.
Yeah, no, I think these are all very good games. I as far as the category is concerned, I think Gnar and maybe even Robot Quest Arena, I feel like those, maybe in Fiction too, I don't see like somebody sitting down at the table and picking that up. Wandering Towers, I think, plays with everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that game, because it's so flexible on player count, because it's so easy to get it to the table.
Yes.
That's the kind of game that I feel like when it comes to welcoming, the theme is really cute. When you see it, it's got, that is table presence. Being able to see the big ring ends up being the board with all the towers around it. And then once you stack up like 8 towers throughout the game, like people can't help but look at it. Like it brings people to the table.
Great. All right. What's our next category?
Next category is Best Small Publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And so for this one, I believe they were saying that they have to have had 5 or fewer games published before this year. And so that was their like qualifier for this. So we've got Distilled, Earthborn Rangers, For Northwood, Lunar Rush, and Raising Robots.
Yeah, a lot of good games here too. I know Earthborn Rangers has gotten a lot of attention. For Northwood, as a solo taking game, is probably the cutest thing on the planet. Distilled, I played. I like that. Lunar Rush and Raising Robots, have not played either of those games.
I feel like I haven't heard of either of those games, honestly.
Yeah, well, they're small publishers, Chris.
Oh, you know, that is fair, yeah. I've seen For Northwood pop up a lot on my feeds.
Yes.
Just because I'm a part of a couple of solo gaming groups, and it's portable. For me, it's like I said last week, like, it checks off all the boxes for what I want in a solo game. Compact, easy to get to play, short game runtime, like, it fits all of that.
Yeah,
well. Earthborn Rangers, I've heard, is a really fun co-op game. I've wanted to try that out. I can't find it anywhere right now. And same with Distilled. I have a copy, and it's been sitting around this whole time. I haven't gotten a chance to play it.
Yeah, same. I'm going to go with Distilled here, because I think it's a good game. It's a good, solid game, and I think the production is better than I think anyone expected. So I think for that, I mean, Earthborn Rangers, I mean, there's a lot of good games here. Earthborn Rangers, I think Distilled. I'm going to go with Distilled.
I think it's going to come down to Earthborn Rangers or Distilled.
Gotcha.
So if you vote for Distilled, I'll vote for Earthborn.
All right.
I think actually I'm more for Earthborn mainly because it's co-op, and I've been having more and more appreciation for co-op games these last couple of years.
Sounds good. All right. What's up next, Chris?
All right, next is Best Strategy Game. Mm-hmm. So we've got Darwin's Journey.
Uh-huh.
Again, we have Distilled.
Uh-huh.
Earth, Forest Shuffle, and The White Castle.
Oh, this is a lot of challenging competition here. I don't...
Yeah.
I mean, when I think strategy games, I think heavier. And I've had this conversation with Tom many years ago as far as, like, you know, tactical games where you're making decisions as you go versus, like, long-term building games. So there's kind of somewhat of a mix here. White Castle has a huge following, a surprisingly big following.
Oh, yeah. This is, like, this came after Red Cathedral, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Devere did a really nice job. Small game, but I think everyone I've seen, so many people looking to pick it up or playing at the table. Earth has a tremendous following. And again, it's a little fiddly at the table, but it's big following. Distilled, obviously, fan favorite from Origins, not a big surprise. Forest Shuffle, I thought was going to be like my favorite game of all times. I still like it. I don't know if you played it, Chris.
It just
overstays its welcome. It's long.
Oh,
it's a long game. That sucks. You can play it on Board Game Arena if you want to try it out. It's not difficult. It's really such an interesting idea, because I know you like forest games.
Yeah.
And it's all about having trees out there and then having the appropriate insect life and animals that go along with it. So, yeah, it's a pretty neat game. Darwin's Journey is an interesting one. I got it through Kickstarter, but the expansion that comes with the Kickstarter that I backed moves it from an okay kind of game to an actually good game. I don't know if they're necessarily considering that here.
So I feel like from these games, the only one I've played has been Earth.
Okay.
And while I really do enjoy Earth, I feel like and I have the same issue when it comes to things like Wingspan and Terraforming Mars, games that have this like massive like 150 plus card deck. I feel like I wouldn't put something like that in best strategy, just because it becomes very hard to build strategies when you have a deck that's so big and you're not running through most of that deck.
Sure.
So as much as I like Earth, I feel like my vote would probably go more for White Castle or Distilled.
I like all these games somewhat equally, and that's not the highest of praise. I mean, they're not bad games. They're just... None of these games would be a buy for me.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, they're all plays. And some of them are higher than others. So...
I feel like White Castle being the kind of game it is in such a small box, mm-hmm. and not having to like you said, when you talk about Distilled before, you brought up like the production quality yeah. and everything, but like that's not the game, that's not the strategy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come from the production. Whereas White Castle, like Devere always has great component quality,
yeah,
but their production is never like, you know, super lavish or anything. So I feel like small box, big strategy game, I feel like I lean more towards something like that.
Yeah, I think you're about right there. I'm gonna hedge my bets with Earth just because I think it's very popular. Yeah. But I see your point as far as like, if you're gonna play a strategy game, if you can condense it to something meaningful time-wise and physical space and everything else, I think that's a real accomplishment. So
yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. All right, what's next?
One of my favorite categories, best two-player games.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. So we have Lorcana, mm-hmm. Match of the Century.
Nice.
Sail.
Yes.
Sky Team and Star Wars, the deck building game.
These are all really good games.
Like, yeah, this category is stacked.
Yeah, this might be the category to beat out of all the categories. We haven't seen the rest, but this, I love kind of all these games.
Yeah, you spoke about Match of the Century, yeah. and I saw it today when I was like looking through this list, and I was like, wow, that's a really interesting idea. Like, I really want to look more into that.
I'm really a super big fan of that game, and especially, and I got to play it recently, and then, I don't know. Star Wars is great. I mean, look, Star Wars is Star Wars, so it's kind of unfair, but mm-hmm. it is a really good two-player deck-building game, and Star Wars has had a lot of game products out there. This is surprisingly one of their best. Like, it's up there. Like, I felt like it was going to get forgotten. It got an expansion that's coming out, I think, at Gen Con, or at least being demoed at Gen Con. But it does it really smartly. So, but it doesn't, I don't know. It, other than cleaning up the market a little bit, it doesn't do anything necessarily radically new.
So, I feel like when I played Star Wars, the deck building game, mm-hmm. it felt like I was playing Star Realms, just with a little bit more, like, mechanics added onto it.
Yeah, the new mechanics are better though. I mean, the neutral factions that you could put on, the fact that you could knock out of the players' cards from the market, that was always the problem with Star Realms. Like, there's just junk out there and you're like, all right, I'll take the blob ship. It's a very thematic game, but if it's gonna be a two-player game, I don't know, it's hard. I mean, how are you gonna beat Sky Teams this year?
Yeah, I feel like I love Sail. In any other year where Sky Team didn't exist, I feel like this list would go to Sail. And if, me personally, at least, Sky Team, I feel like has just been absolutely amazing. But also, like, you know, we didn't say anything about Lorcana, but you know, it was running conventions for a good chunk of last year. It's been really popular. It's one of the few TCG games that have been able to kind of like compete with Magic, yes. Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon. And I think it pops up again later on another list where I think it warrants a spot.
The only thing I would say about it is if I'm going to say that Star Wars, the deck building game, is not original enough to be like the, it's not like, it's a two-player game, but Sky Team is unique as a two-player game, then I feel Lorcana is not unique enough because there's so many CCGs that do almost the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm for the love of the game, Match of the Century, but Sky Team's going to win this.
Yeah.
All right. What you got next, Chris?
Next is Best Solo Game.
Oh!
So
there you go.
We have 20 Strong. For Northwood,
mm-hmm.
we have Kinfire Delve, Legacy of You, and Sleeping Gods, Distant Skies.
Okay. Obviously, Legacy of You won Origins Awards. God, Distant Skies is fine. I haven't played 20 Strong, and I haven't played Kinfire.
Kinfire was on, oh, what list did we just do the other day? I feel like we saw like three different Kinfire board games that were up for nominations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I feel like the more I'm seeing it, the more I'm interested in checking it out. For me personally, Ford Northwood
Same.
Is the one that I'm putting my vote for.
Yeah.
Sleeping Gods, I know it's got the pedigree. Everybody really liked the first one.
Yeah.
And I think Distant Skies is just kind of adding and improving on the formula. But I think the artwork for Northwood, the way I like playing solo games, I think this is the one I would put my vote for.
Same. When I play a solo game, I want to play something manageable. Now, on the opposite side, there's Mr. President, which is just a gigantic, crazy
one. I wanted to try that. Was that last year?
I think so. I think it came out.
Oh, yeah. How was that not on this list? I feel like, even though it is a monster, right? I feel like it had a big enough impact mm-hmm. when it came out mm-hmm. that it should have at least gotten a slot on here.
So, I mean, Dice Tower voters, nominee people, Dice Tower people are generally like, I guess, light to middleweight games. So I don't.
Okay.
So like I said, with Tom stuff, like I always feel like there should be a heavy category and I don't really feel like there's a real heavy category. Mm-hmm. So I'm not surprised it's not here. It's like it's like Spiel des Jahres, right? Their yeah. Kenner Spiel award is like, this is the heavy strategy game. And you're like, not really, but okay. They pick great games, so I'm not down on them, but yeah. So if I'm going to play something solo like that, I like the smaller version of it. So I'm going to for Northwood.
Woo. All right. So next one is most innovative team. And what we've got is Books of Time,
uh-huh.
Earthborn Rangers, Kuntahora. I haven't heard of this next one. Noobs in Space. And again, Sky Team.
That's Sky Team. It's everywhere. Jeez.
Yeah. It's really, you notice it, you always see like a game or two kind of run away with a lot of awards mm-hmm. every year.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like you never really see like a small box two-player game sure. that runs away with it.
I haven't played Noobs in Space. I've played the others.
I got Books of Time in a math trade, still haven't played it.
It's interesting because basically it's a tableau builder, but instead of building on the table, you have two ring like a binder.
Three ring binder.
Yeah. There's small two ring. I think they're two. Maybe they're right. Maybe it's three.
Maybe I think it is two.
Okay. And it's really amazing when you open the box, you got these rings and you put together the books, and then throughout the game, you add pages to your books, and then there are several actions where you're choosing things to do in your books. So it's very innovative as far as that's concerned, because it takes, you know, tableau building to a different level. This is a rough one.
So have you played Earthborn or Kuntahora?
Yeah.
So out of these, since you've played most of them, which one would you pick? No pressure, but you decide the winner right now.
Yeah. Oh, man. Kuntahora is great. It's really great. I don't know if it deserves an award. I don't know if it deserves more innovative. It has a recycled material for user pieces, which feels really nice. Books of Time is fine. I gave it a play. Sky Team is great.
But did Sky Team innovate?
I don't know if it innovates.
Because I love the game, but like it's a dice placement game at the end of the day.
I mean, the challenge with Sky Team for me is it's great, but also I do feel like it's so great that you overlook the fact that you're not communicating verbally, which I almost feel like it loses a little in the thematic side of that. Just like, so I'm going to go with Earthborn Rangers, because I do think it's innovative, both in the theme and the actual practice. That being said, I haven't played Noobs in Space.
Okay.
So maybe that game is the best and I have not played it yet, but I will try to play that. Cosmos is a cool company too. So I'm happy to
check
that out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what's up next?
All right. Next one is best cooperative game.
Okay.
We've got Kinfire Chronicles Nightfall.
Okay.
Again, Sky Team. Sleeping Gods Distant Skies. Tales from the Red Dragon Inn. Mm-hmm. And Unmatched Adventures Tales to Amaze.
Yeah, other everything but Kinfire. I don't know why I'm I have a blind spot with Kinfire. I'd like to play it if anyone has Kinfire. I mean, it's Sky Team, right? It's Sky Team.
I feel like Sky Team gets away with this.
I mean, it literally has the word team in it.
I feel like Sleeping Gods is a very it's a very big heavy game compared to these other ones.
Yeah, it's not really it.
No, I feel like you have to invest more time into it because it's you have to clock in multiple games with it to kind of get the Sleeping Gods experience.
Yes. And it's Sky Team.
Yeah.
They're all fine. Again, Tales of the Red Dragon Inn, I weirdly really enjoy that kind of, you know, I love the character design and the characters here. Tales of the Maze again is great too, but as far as a co-op game, like, and even Sleeping Gods is a great series. I played the, you know, it's Sky Team. they're all good games. Again, like, that's the benefit of having great games. All of these categories have great games.
I mean, good. It's good that at least, like, the category is stacked instead of just, like, it's one or two and the rest of them are just fodder.
It's true. All right.
Best party game.
Ooh, it's party, man.
So we have Among Cultists.
Uh-huh.
Blob Party.
Sure, of course.
Fiction.
Yes.
Nekojima.
Uh-huh.
And That's Not a Hat.
Okay. I mean, Chris, you and I played one of these together.
Yes, we've played Nekojima, and I am a massive fan of it. I'm really happy that it's coming to, like, retail, because at first it was just going to be a Kickstarter game, and it became so popular that now they're actually going to be making production copies of it.
Sure. I'll tell you this, like, this game should not be fun. It just shouldn't.
It's stressful.
It's a very stressful game. It's, and also, like, weirdly thematically, like, you're putting up, you know, like, is it power lines? Is this supposed
to be? Yeah, so you're like putting up like poles to extend mm-hmm. power lines across this island of cats.
Uh-huh.
And you have to hang cats on the power lines, but they can't touch other power lines and they can't touch the floor either. And it's a dexterity game.
Yes.
It's funny because, like, in my head, I wouldn't think of it as a party game. But then seeing it in this category, I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Especially seeing something like Among Cultists on here.
Sure.
Where I'm like, that's a bit of a heavier game. Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge fan of Godot games.
Yes.
Human Punishment is, like, my favorite social deduction game.
Sure.
So they're great. But Nekojima, I feel like, what a crazy experience that's been of just, like, highs and lows, so much tension in such a silly theme, and having them be like these, like, thick wooden like cylinders that you're stacking on top of each other with the ropes that catch on everything and the cats that just want to keep grabbing onto those ropes. I feel like for me, Nekojima is the one I would vote for.
I would say I'm surprised Nekojima didn't show up in the co-op category, because it plays really well as a co-op.
Yeah, the team version was really well. And actually, after we played the co-op version, I feel like that's the only way I've played Nekojima since then. Yeah,
I'm going to go with Nekojima for sure.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of party games are about yelling and jumping up and down and, like, crowding around a table. This one is, like, how far away can I physically get from the table in order not to, like, tip it or make it fall or, like, Nekojima.
Yeah, it's got the most, like, butt-clenching moments.
It's a future category over there for you, Tom.
Greatest butt-clenching moment goes to Nekojima.
All right, what's up next?
All right, next we've got the best theming.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Age of Comics, mm-hmm. Distilled, Sky Team, The Fox Experiment, and Thunder Road Vendetta. And so I remember when they were talking about this category, they mentioned that it's not just about, like, the best theme, but also themes that might be underrepresented or that are very unique.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that have been added to this.
I mean, from a an interest perspective, personal interest perspective, Age of Comics is something that I was interested in. And again, for that theme, I was interested in. Distilled was something I, as far as the theme, was not interested in at all. But it's very thematic. Like, you make the different liquors, and it follows the kind of chemical process, and it's really interesting. Sky Team? I mean, again, the silent thing's a little bit of an oddity, but yeah. The Fox.
I wouldn't put it as thematic, though.
Sure,
like, you know, you have to open flaps, but like, it doesn't feel like,
no.
You don't feel like you're flying a plane. You feel like you're like, you know, I wouldn't put, it's won a lot of categories in my heart, and I think it's going to win a lot of categories at the end of the day. I don't think thematic is one of them, though.
Yeah. And I'm going to stick with Distilled here, because I think that the production and the gameplay is thematic. And I think that categories should be changed from best theming to best thematic game. Okay. Otherwise it's like you were saying, what they were mentioning, like best theme. Cool. Like themes that you do not see should be recognized. Like that could certainly be its own category, but Distilled does feel like you are operating, you know, a distillery. So
yeah. Whereas like Thunder Road does feel like if you're Mad Max the movie in a board game,
sure.
Like, you know, it does, it's bumper car racing is what it ends up being. Mm-hmm. And it is fun. And Fox Experiment, I think the theme for Fox Experiment is so interesting. Where they're like, you know, like the experiment where they're trying to like domesticate foxes, mm-hmm. and like learning more about like passing traits throughout generations. I think that's a really, really cool theme. I haven't played it, so I don't know how well it comes across in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like out of all of these, Age of Comics is the theme that's attracting me the most.
Yes. All right. What's up next?
Next is Best Artwork.
Ooh, I love this category.
Yeah. So we have Dixit Disney Edition,
mm-hmm.
Kinfire Chronicles Nightfall,
mm-hmm.
Lorcana, Septima, and Sleeping Gods Distant Skies.
I love Dixit. I own a chunk, like a serious long chunk of Dixit. And it's kind of smart to do Disney, although you could argue that the brilliance of Dixit, especially originally, was that it was so abstracted that it allowed for that kind of diversity of clues and guesses. So yeah. Maybe it works against it. And I think Lorcana too, I don't know. Like,
I will say the art on some of the Lorcana cards is amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge sucker for like full art cards and stuff like that. And Lorcana does an amazing job with their like super rare cards,
mm-hmm.
like amazing art. And I think it's more like, something I would like to see is changing best artwork to like, I don't know what you would call the category, but like how well the artwork translates to the game.
Sure.
Because like you thematic said, like, artwork. Dixit.
Yeah.
Yeah. We mix the two categories together, thematic artwork. Because like Dixit, like you said, like Disney makes sense, but at the same time, like you said, the appeal of Dixit mm-hmm. was the abstract art.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that kind of takes away from it. And I feel like sure. this is a Dixit that I'm not interested in playing because of it.
I mean, for me, Chris, I feel like it should be original artwork. I feel like,
yeah.
I feel like Disney artwork is kind of cheating a little bit. It's like, it's some of the greatest artists in the world are, you know, work for Disney. And I don't know. I don't feel like I think it should be original. I think I should see something new and innovative as far as artwork is concerned. And I think I can't vote for either Disney in that case. I think it disqualifies itself as an IP. It's, you know, it's like,
but
best.
But one thing I will say when it comes to Lorcana mm-hmm. is they don't just go and take like Steamboat Willie Mickey and just like slap him on a card. They'll have like Mickey in like a musketeer outfit mm-hmm. with scissors, like, and it's like, oh, okay, like they kind of like do like what comics do, like Elseworld stories. Mm-hmm. It's almost that's what they're doing with Lorcana. It's like you have like Battle Princess
sure.
Cinderella, and it's like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, and they make interesting artwork from their IP.
It's just hard to imagine that it's anything truly original, considering the amount of artwork out there for Disney. Maybe some of them are original pieces. I mean, of course they are, but I don't know if the ideas are. I mean, Sleeping Gods, Ryan Lockett does his artwork and the game design, which I think is always great. But the one that really just kind of blew me away, and it's the reason why I picked up the game, was Septima.
Really?
The artists from Mind Clash do a wonderful job. And you can take a look at the cover here. It's so evocative. And I think that's the thing that really, like, the artwork embodies the game. Like you were talking about, like, thematic artwork. Yeah. I feel like when you look at Septima and you imagine the witch's coven, the artwork, like the trees, you know, are part of that world. Like nature is a part of that world. And I think it's evocative. Where when I see, like you said, the artwork with Disney stuff is brilliant and sharp and amazing. And I would never take anything away from it, but it's always like, it's a thing. It doesn't feel like a part of the game. It feels like a piece that has been brought in. And again, so I'm going to go with Septima. Which Disney are you going? You're going to go for Lorcana?
I'm probably going to pick Lorcana for mine, but it's like, it's funny because whenever we went to the thematic games, one game that did come to mind was, I'm like, oh, I'm surprised Septima didn't make the cut onto this, because I feel like that's a theme that you don't see very often. And that's a theme that's really interesting about, like, witch's coven, and not just like hunt the witch or find the evil witch. It's like it's a nice way to, like, finally use the theme of witches.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right, what's next up?
This is the best reprint nominee.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so they said that it has to be a reprint that is true enough to the original game and not a big enough change. So what they have is Castles of Burgundy Special Edition, La Granja, Raw,
yes,
Santa's Workshop, and Zuvadis.
Okay. I've played all of these. Also, all very good. I think Zuvadis is the most new version of a thing.
Yeah, it's had the biggest, I guess, theme change, art change. Yeah.
It's hard. What would be, like, what makes it the best reprint? Is it the best game or the best new version? Like, it went further.
So I feel like, I guess it's like, what made the biggest change from the original to this one? And not the biggest change, but the best one.
Yes.
Because, like, Zuvadis added a few mechanics to make gameplay smoother, player counts, and, like, other than that, the game was largely unchanged, but the theme makes it a lot easier to get to the table, in my opinion.
Sure.
I agree. It's just something. Anthropomorphic animals, it just hits with a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, Raw got a huge visual upgrade with this edition, especially if you got the Pharaoh edition with the nice heavy wooden tiles. Like it's got deluxe written all over it. Me personally, Castles of Burgundy takes my vote. I think it turned Castles of Burgundy from a tan, beige, brown, and green game to something that's got vibrant colors. A really nicely redone board, the vineyard expansion with it. That was a really cool design where it's like a triple layer board that goes up. So you actually feel like it's like steps of a vineyard. In like this production was just quality through and through and made an amazing game that I could not get to the table because it looked boring as sin.
Sure.
It's so easy to get out now. Granted, the box is. The size is the weight of a 10-year-old, but you know, I'll take it for a game as good as Castles of Burgundy. I'll take that.
Yeah, Santa's Workshop is a much better version. It was really challenging to play. La Granja, I have the original, or I think I might have given it away or something at some point. The new version's better because it La Granja has a lot of actions you can take, and it's multi-use cards, so it's nice to have that visual. That new visual clarity. Anthony has The Castles of Burgundy, the new production version, and everyone loves it. I'm going to go with The Castles of Burgundy because it does have an expansion, and the original version of Castles of Burgundy, even the newer version of Castles of Burgundy, is still kind of really flat and plain and nothing of a thing.
Yeah.
And now this new version is like epic.
Yeah, because I remember when they announced that new like anniversary edition, and I was like, oh wow, finally a Castles of Burgundy that will look nice.
Yeah,
and then it was pretty much they just like scaled up the saturation a smidge, and they're like, that's good enough.
Yes,
but this one, and especially if you have like, I have the acrylic tiles for them.
Oh, nice.
And like it's just, it feels so nice playing a game like that.
I like Castles of Burgundy. I didn't buy the expansion. I didn't buy this new version of it. I have the original, and I play a lot on Board Game Arena. This version, even though I didn't buy it, and I didn't buy any of these new versions, to be fair, I almost bought it, even though I'd be like, I don't want to get this. I want to get newer games to the table, but like it was intriguing. So
yeah.
All right.
I wouldn't recommend the 3D printed everything for Castles of Burgundy.
All right.
I feel like that's unnecessary.
That's a step too far.
With the tile, yeah, that one was a step too far. But I think just like what comes in the regular box for Castles of Burgundy Anniversary, more than enough.
Sounds good. All right. What's our next category?
Right. The next one is Best Production Value.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Castles of Burgundy.
Oh. I've heard of that.
Distilled. Yeah, right? Distilled. We've heard of that one a few times. We have Raw, Thunder Road Vendetta, and World Wonders.
Okay, so this is production value, not just best production.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's where I feel like, while Castles of Burgundy was a great production, it also was a pretty penny to get it.
Yes, very, very. They went a little bit high on that price there.
Yeah.
Raw's a great production, but also,
yeah,
I don't know if it needed to be 20 pounds, like you said.
Yeah, Raw, the it's pretty heavy with all the thick wooden tiles, if you get that one. They have the one where it's just cardboard tiles as well. But I don't know. For me personally, I liked the Pharaoh Deluxe one.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for those.
I already mentioned Distill has a great production. Vendetta, great production. World Wonders,
but I feel like production value.
Yes.
Vendetta, you can get it at a pretty decent price. But the production is nothing super crazy. No. I feel like the roads, good quality, they interlock really nicely. It's a really cool idea the way the road keeps going. The cars themselves are nothing that crazy, especially with the kind of miniatures you have nowadays. Yeah. So I feel like while the production is nice, it's like, you know, it's nothing out of the ordinary. Whereas, like, you keep saying, like, the production for Distilled, like, you know, that's a really nice production.
Mm-hmm.
For what ends up being, I think it's just a $60 game, like, you know, any other retail game, right?
I mean, they had its Kickstarter, which was expensive. But as retail's concerned, yeah, it's definitely a lot. World Wonders is fine. It has the buildings. So, it's a polyomino game with, like, you know, kind of buildings in it. So... I think the answer is going to be the Castles of Burgundy, because I think people are not going to see the word value in there. They're just going to see best production. So yeah.
if it's just best production, then I think just Castles of Burgundy.
Yes, I think
adding value, and then I think it's got to get knocked down a couple pegs.
Yeah, I mean, Distilled is almost completely cards the whole game, so I don't know if necessarily that is something that, you know, tweaks people as far as, you know, production. Like, it's great to have artwork and cards and stuff like this. And there are some pieces in the game. It does have its own kind of super deluxe version, but it's primarily cards. So I couldn't see going along with that. I think it's going to be Castles of Burgundy. I mean, Raw's fine. I mean, World Wonders is okay as far as value is concerned, but it's going to be Burgundy.
It's going to be
Burgundy, man. Ron Burgundy all day long. All right.
All right.
We got a last category here, Chris.
Yeah, so we have Best Game of the Year, and we have 10 different games for this one. So it's Darwin's Journey, Distilled, Earth, Nucleum, Forest Shuffle, Sky Team, The White Castle, Thunder Road Vendetta, Ticket to Ride Legacy,
and
World Wonders.
Ooh. Yeah. I'm surprised to see Nuculum here, to be honest.
I'm actually surprised I didn't see Nuculum in other categories.
Like I said, I think they run a little bit light on their games. Nuculum is a little heavier, a little more complex.
Yeah, this is about like the same weight as like Barrage.
Kind of. I mean, Barrage, yeah. I mean, it's in the same ballpark for sure. I mean, it's it's got more options than Barrage. Barrage is a little bit Barrage is a little more complex because you have to think like, if I build a dam here or I build the power station here, how is that going to affect them? And then, like, I think Barrage is a little bit heavier. Nuculum has a lot of choices. That's where the complexity comes in.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, Ticket to Ride. I haven't played that. I haven't played the. Anthony has it. I haven't played that version of the Legacy kind of Ticket to Ride.
I feel like, in my opinion, at least, Ticket to Ride Legacy, I cannot pick it because paying over $100 for a Ticket to Ride game sounds like too much for me.
I don't feel, again, and I appreciate this, but I don't think it's going to be Thunder Road or World Wonders or Forest Shuffle. Yeah. Darwin's Journey is fine, but I can't imagine that winning. It's going to, Earth is very popular.
Yeah.
White Castle's popular. Like, Sky Team's popular.
It's funny because I feel like earlier on in the year, people were just saying like Thunder Road Vendetta and Earth, that was the like the pinnacle of board games. I feel like that's what it was early on. Thunder Road had a huge, like, I mean, it's already come out with like three expansions since it, and it's still within its first year. You know, Earth, I feel like a lot of people took to Earth really quickly. And it's still talked about a lot, but it's funny because as much as people have really liked it, and as much as it's still kind of like in the conversation, it didn't get any nominations in any of the categories. I think this is the first time we've seen Earth in the last like three episodes that we've done. It hasn't shown up in anything.
It's very popular. Like you said, it's this and Ark Nova were like the new kids on the block. They were like the new Terraforming Mars on the block. Yeah. And it's fine. It's just, it came after a lot of other games did the same kind of thing. And Earth had an expansion not too long ago, or a Kickstarter expansion. So
yeah, for abundance.
Yeah, I mean, I love the Nuculums here. I'm a fan of the game, and I would want it to win. I don't think it's gonna win, but like you said, it's not in any other categories, and it's not been mentioned in anything else. So,
because like if we're going by like, you know, when you see like all the awards that that you know show up, still popped up in most of them.
Sure.
But, like, is it Game of the Year material? Or is it just a, like, Jack of All Trades? Sure. And it's just doing pretty well in all these categories?
Yeah. I feel like Sky Team's good. I don't know if it's Game of the... I wouldn't say Game of the Year. White Castle, I think, is good. I wouldn't say Game of the Year. I wouldn't pick any... None of these are our Game of the Year. But that's a little bias on my part. If I have to pick one here... It, for me personally, it'd probably be Nuculum, although it's not going to be the winner, sadly.
So for me, I would pick Sky Team. I feel like White Castle was one good theme away from just really popping off. I feel like if it just had a slightly more attractive theming to it.
Earth might pull it out. Earth might, you know.
I hope so. I think Earth is great. I would, if I had Terraforming Mars, I'd sell it for Earth. Like,
wow, okay.
Yeah, okay. You know, like, because art-wise, way better.
It's a lot. It's a lot cleaner. Oh, art-wise, yeah. Art-wise, not even. I've talked about the art for like forever. I'm just like, hey, this artwork.
Yeah,
it's such a good game.
Yeah, it's the biggest deterrent for me to want to get Terraforming Mars to the table. I can't stand
100%
the like that the lazy art. But the iconography on Earth is really clean. Mm-hmm. I really like the whole composting mechanic. I feel like mechanically, like Earth does a lot, but it does a lot very well.
It seems like Earth is a gamer that played Terraforming Mars and felt like
there was some trauma there. So like when you play Earth, if you ever play Terraforming Mars, the problem with Terraforming Mars is it's really hard to get the cards that you want. Like you just get stuck. Even if you draft, you're like, you're going to get stuck with some cards, or you can't play some cards because they're really expensive, or you can't play some cards because it doesn't meet certain conditions of the game. And then you play Earth and it's like, here's like 400 cards in your hand. And you're like, ugh, all right, I'm going to compost these and get 400 more cards.
it feels almost like if you took Terraforming Mars and you mixed it with Jump Drive.
Okay.
Where like your whole turn is about like, here's drawing a bunch of cards. Yes. Here are your options. Keep what you need. Toss whatever you don't need. And what I like is the compost ends up being points.
Sure.
And like, you know, every card has a purpose, whether it's getting tossed out or it's getting added to your tableau. You're never forced to add it into your tableau. You can just keep composting them if that's the strategy you want to go with. But I like every turn feels like a power turn because you're just drawing options. You're drawing more abilities. And it's never like overwhelming abilities. You're just kind of stacking small incremental effects on top of each other.
Agreed. And again, I think with their expansion, I think they recognized there were some problems with the game and they fixed it. So. Yeah,
and they took an approach that Race for the Galaxy did, where it's like you have a sort of like tutoring effect that you can dig through the deck to find cards you need. And that's something that Race for the Galaxy did, and they're like things like the third expansion, where you could do like a prestige action and just search through. You have like certain criteria, and like, I want to find a military card, and you would dig through, and the first military card you find, you take it.
All right. Well, I think we got a winner there. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We're going to go with Earth. It's a nice place, not just a nice place to live, but it's also possibly game of the year.
Yes.
All right, Chris, we got some honorable mentions here. Some special games from the Dice Tower.
Oh, yeah. So they added two games into the Dice Tower Hall of Fame. And one criteria I really liked that they added for this was the game had to have been out for at least 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so like they talked about before about like the lasting effect that a game has. I feel like that's kind of what they're highlighting with this. It's games that kind of withstood the test of time, got through all the chaff, and you know, they're still impactful even today. So they've added Love Letter and Lords of Waterdeep to this list now.
Nice. I 100% agree. Both these games are a buy for me. I own both of these games. I've championed Love Letter for a very long time. I think it's a fantastic game. Lords of Waterdeep, again, another fantastic game, whether you call it a gateway game or a welcoming game. It's a tremendous game as well. So,
yeah,
100% agree with both of those for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Although, I will say, with the expansion, Squadrons of Skullport for Lords of Waterdeep makes the game infinitely better. So,
you'll have to wait until that's 10 years old.
Needs to be with it. So, all right. Well, Chris, again, thank you so much for being on for the last 3 weeks, for subbing in for Anthony. What a wonderful time we've had. Hopefully everyone had a great time with you as well, and hopefully we can get you to come back on the podcast. But Chris, you do a lot of great things, and if people want to find you and all the great things that you do, where should they go?
So you guys can find me on boardgamesforthebetter.org. We're a nonprofit organization. We use board games to help promote social and mental engagement. We've been helping people for the last 2 years, and you can see all the good we're doing on our website. You can also find us on Instagram at Board Games for the Better, and same thing on Facebook.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Chris, for all the great work you do. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Again, Board Game Academic Convention. By the time this comes out, you'll still have like a day or some hours to jump on or register for the live feed. Again, if you're there in New Jersey, we would love to see you in person. And again, thank you everyone out there. Until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Chris.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Night.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You need reliable appliances to help you conquer the day. And Menards carries the largest in-stock selection, starting at low prices and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade today and save big money on new appliances right now at Menards. Number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers, according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Save.